Wilde and Tausch with Brian Bulaga and Riley Yauch as our cousin subs of the day for Tausch and Jesse. Cousin subs, we believe in better. Let's get back to the phones. Let's get to Levi in Plover. Levi, good morning. I'm surprised you would call when your BFF Jesse's not on the show today.
You really had to say that, didn't you, Jason?
I did. Yeah, I did. I'm sorry. It's the truth, but be that as it may. What are your positives and negatives, buddy?
Before I get to that, I got two things to say quick. I want to say that Riley Yauch has been doing fantastic subbing for Jesse. Boy.
He just called Paul. He just called Paul Horning Paul Hornung. So no.
Wait.
I'm not going to let you say that.
So
sorry.
And, it's okay. And also, Jace, I forgot to mention, back in April, the Packers tailgate tour came to Oshkosh for the Special Olympics, and I got even a picture with Brian Bulaga. And I still have that picture since April.
Get that.
I don't know if you remember me, Brian, but the one I got my Packer hat on, my red T-shirt with a number on it, I took a picture with you.
Levi, so, get that sent down to Jesse. We'll get it to Brian.
Sure.
He can sign it for you, and then we'll send it back, okay?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. All right,
and then you can send him a copy signed by you. All right, what do you got for us, positives and negatives?
My positives is the first half, the running game was pretty good. It was almost like a college or high school football game with those stats the Packers did running on the Colts eating their lunch.
Mm-hmm.
But the negative, especially with if Jacobs didn't fumble that ball, we wouldn't have been up 17-0 in the first half. But I just want to give the Colts credit for the second half adjustment, especially stopping the run on them, because they did a pretty good job on that, but even though they still stink at it.
I'm glad you brought that up, Levi, because that was something that I wanted to ask Brian about. And thanks for the call, and get that picture sent so we can send it down to Brian and get it back to you. Here's the thing,
sure.
Brian. You know that the Packers don't want Malik Willis to have to throw a lot, right? Like, they're fine with him making some plays, but Gus Bradley goes into the game knowing that. Why not just open with five defensive linemen? And why not just open with, no, we really are going to dare you to throw the football against us? I know they were missing Blackman, their stud safety. They were missing one of their corners. So maybe there's a little bit of reluctance to say, all right, we dare you to beat us with the pass, because maybe Malik Willis can beat him with the pass. But why not start the game that way and set the tone that way? That was something that I wondered as it got worse and worse and worse in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, I think coaches in general are creatures of habit. Mm-hmm. And they do and will continue to do as long as the game continues to be played and coaches remain coaches, or at least the guys that I grew up around and played with and understood their mentality and the way they think, are always going to go back to what they know and what they can rely on. And regardless of if it's a new QB or not, they're going to start with what they know and what these guys have been coached and what the structure of the defense is, and then they'll make adjustments off that. Do I think Bradley could have made that change a little sooner? Yeah, he needed to. Like, obviously, he needed to, but he didn't. But with that, Matt LaFleur, and this is what I kind of brought up in the first thing I started talking about, Matt LaFleur did a good job of keeping personnel groupings on the field that gave the threat that Malik Willis could throw the football.
Mm-hmm.
And they could get into mismatches very easily and be cut open through simple pass plays, not even really deep, intricate routes, but simple pass plays that if you start throwing out, you know, five D linemen on the field and two linebackers, and you only got four corners and they're in 11 personnel four DBs, so to speak, and you're in 11 personnel, who's covering all the receivers if they do throw it?
Right.
I mean, now you're putting linebackers on Wicks or Dobbs, and it just turns into a mismatch. So Gus Bradley has to play the way the personnel groupings come on the field. All defensive coordinators will speak to that, and you have to match personnel as best as you can, even though you know there's a over a 50% chance they're going to run. What if they don't? What if they don't? We'd rather make Green Bay have to earn their way down the field than, you know, not match personnel properly and get gashed open by a pass and give up an easy touchdown that could have been avoidable. Now, with that, you saw adjustments get made in the second half, and I'm sure there were some choice words in that Colts locker room at halftime about the performance that was shown in the first half. And the Colts, to their credit, they bowed up. They did play, I mean, a cleaner half, so to speak, than they did in the first defensively. But the damage, in my opinion, had been done already. It really had been. Like, the offense got accomplished what they needed to get accomplished. They established a run game. They made that threat well known early on, and then they managed the game in the second half. And defensively, the Packers got done what they needed to get done early. They made the Colts earn everything that they got, and those two things decided the game. So I don't want to say that, like, Gus Bradley just got straight up out coached.
No, but he did.
That,
but
like,
he did.
But Matt LaFleur put together a plan that, you know, it was the better plan of the day. And he did a better job of keeping Gus Bradley guessing and not being able to put in the appropriate defense to stop what Green Bay was doing. So, like, I don't look at it as, like, Gus Bradley should have done X, Y, and Z. I think I'm putting all the compliments on Matt LaFleur and what that offensive staff put together throughout the week to keep that defense guessing. And to me, that was the glaring, standout thing that to me was Matt LaFleur and that staff, they anticipated what the Colts were going to do, and they made adjustments early in the week and not mid-game, and the Colts were trying to make adjustments mid-game, and by that point, too late.
Yeah. All right. I want to get to a little bit more about how they designed their runs in addition to the personnel groupings. I want to get to vomiting on the football, which I did not think was going to be a topic, but that was really something. And I want to get to something that LaFleur said when the Packers were being booed by the fans for being so conservative and not trying to score at the end of the first half. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a couple more calls next. So Sparky in Sussex, I know you've been on hold for a while. Stay there. Eric in Green Bay, I know you've been on hold for a while. Stay there. We'll get to you coming up next. And then we will get to some of these other topics. I always want to take advantage of having Blue here because his insights are second to none. Don't tell Tausch, but he's got a lot of good insights, too. He's just not here today. So we will do that. We'll play some trivia as well. That's all still ahead. So stick around. It's Wilde and Tausch. Get back to the phones, 844-770-3776. We'll also check out some of your text messages coming up. Let's start with Eric in Green Bay. Eric, thanks for holding on, buddy. We appreciate you. What do you got for us?
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're great. How are you?
Doing well. That commercial came at the perfect time. I had to check out at Festival Food, so I was able to hurry through and get to the car in time.
We aim to please.
Alrighty. So, quick positives. I think most of the big things have been covered, but I kind of want to touch base on Matt LaFleur in a little bit more detail. And obviously, he was, giving his flowers to Malik Willis after the game, and the amount of preparation and how fast he took all that information in. But I don't really think he took the opportunity, obviously, to pat his own back. And I think as a teacher, to be able to prioritize and kind of itemize, hey, this is, you're not going to know it all, but this is what you need to know to get through this week. I think he did a masterful job in, what he exposed Malik Willis to and how they were able to work together. And then obviously the play calls throughout the game too. Kind of talk about like there was a big term this week, kind of going into the Badger game. It's related to that was like a signature win versus Alabama. And like I kind of look at for Matt LaFleur, for him inheriting Aaron Rodgers, he didn't really get a lot of credit for a lot of his early success because he was handed the keys to a Ferrari. Mm-hmm. But I think for him, this was one of his signature wins at this point. Again, given the circumstances of a backup quarterback and the lack of preparation to pretty much control the majority of the game. I think fantastic job. And then one more positive real quick, Daniel Whelan. I mean, all three of his punts inside the 20. He had that 59-yard bomb, too. Just to give a little love for the Brad Normans of the world, that punters are people, too. Super, super underappreciated. And I know our special teams has been under a lot of scrutiny, but that was a huge bright spot, flipping the field three times.
Agreed. Yeah. You got any negatives, or was it just all positives for you, Eric?
Well, there were negatives, too. I think a lot of them have been covered. Has it been two straight weeks? Did Quay drop the pick week one, too?
They've only played two games, so yeah, two straight weeks.
I didn't know if that was him doing it. I think that was him, week one, that dropped the pick, yes, but that was true. We are two for two. I think, if he makes a play there, that kind of give a little bit more forgiveness for the missed tackles and kind of being in the wrong place at the wrong time throughout the game. But, kicking and kicking run defense and Quay Walker are kind of the negatives that have been covered.
All right. Thanks for the call, Eric, and I'm glad you got your grocery shopping done as well. Let me go back to what Eric said quickly, and then we'll get to Sparky. Brian, everyone has an ego, right? I mean, some of us control it better than others. Some of us are motivated by different things than others. Matt LaFleur does have an ego. I don't want to pretend that he doesn't. But he is quick to say, it starts with me. Whether he believes that or not, he always says, it starts with me, even if, say, guys don't execute a really good game plan. And I thought yesterday, what's he going to say, right? Yeah, boy, I really schemed him up, man. Woo! This is one of my best games I've ever put together. But he does, to Eric's point, he does deserve credit, him and Steno and the whole offensive staff. Like, I just thought it was a master class in how to win a game with a guy that you don't really know yet. I mean, he kept saying he's been here for 3 weeks. Like, that can't be easy to do as a coach, as opposed to, like, even with Jordan Love going into the Kansas City game in 2021, at least he had been around Jordan Love. At least he had some idea beyond 20 days of what he was capable of. That's the difference, right?
Yeah, 100%. And, like, no, listen, the coaches they're always going to, like, the buck stops with them, and they'll always say that. And, good, bad, or indifferent, they're the ones at the podium right away, and they got to be accountable. And I think Matt LaFleur does a really good job of that, both when it's both sides of the coin, right? Like, you saw it in Philly, and then you saw it this week. He takes responsibility. And the thing is, which I think players really appreciate about him, is that he does do that all the time, and he does it also in team meetings, right? If something wasn't good enough from their end, he'll take accountability for it. Mm-hmm. It's not like he says one thing to the media and then goes in the team room and says something completely different. So guys respect him and they appreciate him for that. But with that, he deserves a lot of credit. He deserves a lot of credit, and we touched on it earlier. It takes some guts to go not just with a guy that's been there for 18 or 20 days, whatever it was, but then to completely change the game plan from what you're used to doing and what this offense normally looks like and completely change it, run the ball 53 times, which, again, I can't remember the last time the Packers have ever done that.
It's because it was in 1978.
Yeah, okay, so 19. So a little while. It's been a little while since they've done that. And completely change an identity of a team from 1 week to the next. And that takes a lot of guts, and it could have blown up in his face, or mm-hmm. it turned out being the way that it did, and the guys responded to it, and they played really well. So He deserves a ton of credit for this. And Steno and Butkus, I mean, those are the guys that – and listen, the wide receivers did a really nice job blocking downfield too.
They did.
That's something that I thought improved a lot from week one to week two was the wide receivers getting on their aiming points and getting the second level blocked up. So that was a really positive thing for me as well. Those are the guys that when you run the ball 53 times – that's the head coach that calls the plays, Steno, who's the OC, who is very involved with the offensive line, and the offensive line coach. Like, when you got a game plan that's, hey, we're running the rock, I mean, there's a lot of emphasis on the tight ends and the linemen to get the job done, and the receivers have to buy in. They got to be part of it, and they were. And it was a complete effort from head coach to the tight ends coach, the wide receivers coach, running backs, O-line. Like, these guys were all on the same page. They bought in, and the result was good. And it takes the head coach to get these guys to buy into it. The messaging has to be right. The plan has to be right. And the belief was there from top to bottom, and that's what we saw. So, yeah, would we have loved another touchdown or another? Yeah, of course. But, like, we all knew this wasn't going to be the cleanest, prettiest thing. And going into it, like, if you would have told me that we'd rush for whatever, how many yards we did.
261.
And control the game and, rush for 261, control the game and score 16 points and win. I would have taken that in a heartbeat. I would have taken it if it ended up being 10-7 and we still played the same way and we won that ball game. So, like, from top to bottom, that was really well done, and LaFleur deserves a ton of credit for it.
Let's get to one more call. Let's talk to Sparky in Sussex. Sparky, thanks for holding on, buddy. Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great today. Great Monday morning. Just wanted to say, I think Touch better be careful. He takes many more days off. He's going to get Wally pipped here pretty soon.
I'm not saying it. You're not. I'm just. You're just saying. You're just speaking the truth. That's all. Wildy and Bulaga has a ring. It sure does. Wildy and Blue. We can get very creative. Were you at the game yesterday?
Yeah, it was the hottest game I've ever been to. It was god awful. I mean, it's funny that the hottest game I've ever been to was in Green Bay, and the coldest was in Miami on Christmas Day almost 2 years ago because it was 47, rainy, windy, and you weren't dressed for it. So it's just such an odd juxtaposition. But it was miserable. And that was actually my positive was the time of possession. I think it was 2-1.
Yep.
I mean, I believe those linemen were all dumping a lot of weight. And I wonder how they're doing today because they were taking some people out from the stands. We actually went down for a couple minutes. I went down just before halftime to just get in the concourse because the sun was just unbelievable. Yeah. So it was just a great job by the offense and, I mean, the line just controlling things.
Hey, Sparky, we're going to get probably in the 11 o'clock hour to the puking part of this, and we'll find out how many times has Brian Bulaga vomited on the field. So you want to stay tuned for that. But I am curious because we know you have your season tickets. I didn't think they took over the stadium by any stretch, but did it feel like there were more Colts fans there than what you were expecting?
It definitely did. In fact, we had one sitting right in front of us with some other Packer fans, and he was pretty happy about those first few holding calls. But it was great to have him quiet down as the game went on, especially at the end. But I definitely agree. I thought there was a lot more blue in the stadium than we would have liked to have seen.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a surprise to me as well when I was walking up after we got done with Green, or after I got done anyway with Green Bay game day. Did you have a negative?
The only negative was not the Packers. It was, I guess, they were running out of water at halftime. So
wait, the concession stands were?
Yeah, they were out. So people were trying to go into the restrooms, and there were actually lines for the sinks to get water. And
oh my God!
The water, stream. It's a spray. So people are bending, trying to bend their water bottles to get whatever they could in there. It was just amazing. So I don't know if they just didn't stock enough or what the situation was, but that was pretty nasty.
Wow. All right. Well, you're always our man on the street and in the stands and in the concourse. So thanks for your call, Sparky. We appreciate you. Brian, we'll get to the vomiting. Let's get to the vomiting next. Let's not make people wait any longer. Okay? We'll do that next.
Fair enough.
And Malik Willis was, it sounds like, not pleased that he had to carry around and almost had to throw a ball that was at least partially covered in Josh Myers' stomach contents. So we'll get to that coming up. I don't think that you can sue over something like that, but if you do need legal representation, I don't think Malik needs it against Josh. But in all seriousness, if you've been injured and you need legal representation, I hope you never need to make this call, but all you got to do is make that one call. That's all. 414-276-6666. 414-276-6666. That's the number to call for Gruber Law Offices. David Gruber and his team, go to gruber-law.com to find out more about the firm, about all the great things they do in our communities, and all the great lawyers they have. Again, Gruber Law Offices, one call. That's all. We'll get to the puke next. It's Will D'Attouche. Give him hell, time to hell. It was hot, as Sparky mentions. 85 degrees, the temperature. I'm sure it felt like about 110 on the field with the exertion. We saw Elgton Jenkins come to the sideline and projectile vomit. And then going viral during the game, Josh Myers, just milliseconds before snapping the ball, turns his head to the left and bleh. And apparently some of it got on the ball and he snapped it to Malik Willis and then had to block a guy. We'll get Brian's puke stories in a second. Here's how Matt LaFleur retold the story to us after the game.
Yeah, I asked Malik why he didn't throw the ball on that third down, and he told me that Josh threw up on the ball. I was like, that's the first time I've ever heard that. Matter of fact, the official came over to me, Sean came over to me and said, you know, we saw your center throwing up on the ball. Do you want us to take him out next time? I said, absolutely. Please do that because, I mean, you're talking about a critical situation and it's third down and I've never had a throw with vomit on a football. So I don't know. I don't think Malik probably didn't appreciate that.
No, he probably didn't, and it's kind of gross. But the Packers were capable of overcoming that. They did end up having to punt there, but as was mentioned earlier, Daniel Whelan, terrific day. All right, Brian, you played in the league for 12 years. You played in, what, 150, 170 games? How many times did you puke during a game?
Zero. Zero. There's I never puke during a game. No. I just listen, like, I hate vomiting. Like, it is like I will force myself to not do that. Like, I it's literally like, you know, I just hate it. Like, when I'm even when I'm sick, like, I just it is like,
yeah,
no,
it's gross.
I just hate it. And I just, you know, but I've never, I don't know. Like, I've never felt like I had to throw up on the football field. Like, it was never something like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so nauseous or dehydrated that, like, I have to, like, I've never felt that. So, like, I don't know. I've seen guys do it. I've seen guys do it on the field, opposing teams, our team. I've seen it on the sidelines. But I've never personally had to have. Like, I know I've been sick before a game. Like, I was ill and I was throwing up in the locker room or something like that, okay, like in a garbage can. But never, like, mid-play, like we saw Myers do, just, you know, throw up and then snap a ball, like you said, a millisecond later. Like, I've never seen that before. Like, that's like, you know, would be something you'd see in, like, any given Sunday, like a movie or something like
right.
that, right? Like, I think that happened in Varsity Blues, didn't Billy Bob, like, throw up after the night of drinking on the field? And then you said Elgton projectile vomited as he was coming up. Like, I've never seen that before. Like, that's wild to me. So I don't know what the guys were doing pregame or what they were eating. If they didn't think it was going to be that hot out and they ate a huge breakfast and went out there and, like, I don't know what it was,
yeah.
But if that's, I mean, I feel bad for Willis having to handle that ball after he blew chunks on it. That's disgusting. But I'll just be honest with you, like that's absolutely just gross. So, you know, first of all, props to Myers for actually being able to snap the ball as it's full of puke and he's vomiting.
Yeah,
like that's impressive that wasn't a fumble. And then obviously props to Willis seeing that there's vomit on the ball and actually still like doing something with it and making a positive play out of it. Like, hats off to both of them. But Myers, he owes something to Willis after throwing up on a ball and then snapping it back to him. Like, here you go. Have fun with it. Do something with it. Like, it's ugh.
So does he, you know, take us inside the Thursday night O-line dinners? Like, is he, I suppose with Elton doing it too, it's a little bit harder to give him grief about it, but is he's going to hear about it in meetings today, right? And he's going to hear about it. He's going to get some grief all week long from his fellow offensive linemen, right?
There's no doubt. I mean, the razzing that's going to happen at O-line dinner and in that meeting room is going to be, it should be next level. It should be really good. Like, okay, Elton threw up on the sideline as he was coming off. It wasn't on the field or it wasn't on the ball. Like, okay, like that's fine. Like, you puke off the field. It is what it is. It's not a big deal. Like, okay. But when you throw up on the field and then you throw up on the ball and then, and listen, I get it's like a barbaric sport and guys are out there beating the hell out of each other and it's football. But at the end of the day, guys still look at it like, I may land in that puke or I may put my hand down in the ground and it's in that puke. And like, at the end of the day, like, these are still like human beings that look at that as like, that's disgusting. Like, that's really gross. I'd love to hear what one of the Colts D linemen thought that was lined up across from Myers saying what he thought when the dude just turned his head, puked real quick, then snapped the ball. He's probably like, what was that? Yes. He's probably like, what just happened right there? Like, that's disgusting. So, like, yeah, like, I've never seen that happen mid-play like that. Like, I've seen guys, like, you know, after a play, like, kind of walk over, throw up on the side, like, throw up on the ground and then get back in the huddle, but, like, never mid-play, just blow chunks and continue on like it didn't happen.
Maybe it distracted the Colts linemen. They couldn't get off the line as quick. Or he's seeing him vomit.
He's looking at him. He's got little puke in his like beard. He's just being grossed out. I don't even want to touch this guy. I think Donovan McNabb famously like threw up in the huddle, which would be just as bad, if not worse, because now you're surrounded by your 10 teammates and you're puking onto their shoes as they're all waiting for the play call.
Yeah.
I don't think that would be great either. All right. What will be great
is like the replacements. It was like the replacements. Yeah. Remember in the replacements when he threw up in the huddle and they all shuffled over to one side because like, if you puke, that means I'm going to puke. I can't see that. And then they, like, that reminds me of.
and that is, I will say that, it is true that when you see someone puke, suddenly you feel nauseous. And it can be contagious.
Is that a medical thing? Like a condition?
I don't think so. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on the radio. I just know I have felt nauseated myself after seeing someone else, as Brian so eloquently puts it, blow chunks. All right, we need to play trivia. Riley, what is the category you've put together and which caller would you like?
Sports weekend recap trivia, as per usual on a Monday. Jason, you're going to love this. There's one UFC question.
Well, I hope the contestant knows something about it. It doesn't bother me either way. All right, what caller do you want?
I'd like caller number 8 for Josh Jacobs. Had a phenomenal game minus the fumble. So let's go caller number 8.
He ran for 151 yards. Caller 151. Caller 8 right now. 844-770-3776. 844-770-3776. Caller 8 plays trivia next. It's Will Dean Tausch. I'm not a fool. Of getting older, I will escape from dying young. Time for trivia. Let's welcome in our contestants. It is Jerry in the Prairie. Jerry, good morning, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
So you've played this game a lot. Have you ever played when Brian was in as the cousin sub of the day? Cousin subs, we believe in better.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, there's a first time for everything, and Brian's got question two. So let's begin with question one, which is this. What is the name of Alabama's first-year head coach who led the Tide to a 42-10 victory over Wisconsin on Saturday? Is it Jalen Milroe, Kalen DeBoer, or Gabe Neitzel?
I'm going to go with A.
The perfect week is over on the first question. Kalen DeBoer. DeBoer?
Never heard of him.
He was the Washington coach that took them to the college football championship. And now he's the Crimson Tide's head coach. Roll Tide. And they did at Camp Randall on Saturday. All right, let's bounce back, Jerry. Brian, you've got question number two.
All right, Jerry, question two. The Milwaukee Brewers lost to which National League West team last night after a blown save from Jared Koenig? Was it
Arizona?
Okay.
Managed by Kalen DeBoer.
Have to go through it.
All right, we're one for two. Jerry, here's question three.
All right.
Which Georgian, the country, not the state, fighter defeated Sean O'Malley to claim the UFC bantamweight title at UFC 309 on Saturday? Was it Diego Lopes, or is that Lopez?
Lopez with an S. It's fine.
Thank you. Thank you. Question. That's one option. Two. Corey Sandhagen or Sandhagen. Or three, and there's no way I'm going to pronounce this name correctly. Merab Dashkavili.
Close enough. Davalishvili.
Davalishvili. Merab Davalishvili. Who you got, Jerry?
We'll go. I'm going to go with that one you couldn't pronounce. C.
C is correct.
Correct.
Frankly, that same name sounded made up for a moment there. All right. Well, you got two out of three. That means you got three of the possible four entries into Friday's drawing. The rare get the first one wrong, get the last two right. Doesn't happen very often when we play trivia, but you did it today. Jerry, thanks for your loyalty to the show, buddy. We appreciate you.
Thanks. Love you guys.
That is Wilde and Tausch trivia, and what a trivia it was. All right, we will kick off the 11 o'clock hour. Scheduled to appear from Unsportsmanlike is Michelle Smallman, or as I call her, Mishmel, because I mispronounce her name half the time. She and I were in the same place, and yet I didn't get to meet her. She was at the Tundra Trio. They did the national ESPN radio from there. We did Green Bay Game Day from there. But I didn't actually get to talk to her, even though I like to think I'm the number one reason why she's a Packers fan, because I did such a great job of convincing her when she appeared on our show. So she will talk to us. But I do want to get to what Brian saw from the scheming. We talked about how well the line blocked. We talked about personnel groups. What did he see from the scheming of the run game that allowed it to be so productive? A little tackle talk with Brian Bulaga to kick off the 11 o'clock hour. That starts in 2 minutes. So stick around. It's Wilde and Tausch.